They knew. It's called Agenda Summary with the time date of 11:59 in your inbox. House Bill 69 appears as the first bill, next bill for our consideration, and that runs down through House Bill 115. So we will follow that current agenda summary. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 69. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 69 from the Revenue Committee, an act relating to revenue for transportation purposes, increasing the fuel tax and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 69, Highway Funding, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Representatives who voted yes, Blickery, Eklund, Goggles, Kirkbride, Laux, Madden, Petroff. There were 2 no votes, Representative Northrup and Representative Simlick.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Madden?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 69 do pass and there are no standing committee amendments. And I'll explain the bill. First of all, a lot of you just got back, and you need to dig around in your mailbox and find all of the handouts that are either stapled together or they'll have a single indication that I put my initial on the bottom, District 40. And we'll be going through those in a little bit of a time, a little. Sorry. Now, do I have to start over? All I said was you got to look in your mailbox and get the handouts that pertain to this particular bill with my name on them. Okay, as far as background, the long-term funding has been a continuing problem, and it's been a growing problem for YDOT for at least 10 years. It has consumed much of your time in my time over the last 7 years. This was recognized by leadership in both houses last year when Management Council formed what was called a super committee. And they tell me, for people who have been around here a long time, that super committees are there's precedence for them, but they don't happen very often. I think it's the first one that I ever saw in the time I've been here. But anyway, it consisted of 28 members from both houses. And the reason they formed this super committee is that we've had some attempts in the past where one thing leads to another, and we get a bill, and there's always a reason to vote no on it, just like a lot of tax bills, and it's still with us. And we're getting to the point where we're, going to the usual sources for funding. This is not effective anymore. I think their mission to us was that adequately addressing roads is critical to a thriving economy, and Wyoming probably more than any other state runs on roads, so to speak. We're not an airport intruck state. Airports that travel back and forth like some places, and roads are critical. After this 28-member committee, which consisted of the Revenue Committee, Joint Revenue Committee, and Joint Transportation Committees, after we got organized, we had a considerable study starting last summer, very early in the summer. I think it was in early June, and the Revenue Committee was ultimately charged with developing a funding package that we're going to talk about in part today. Before we did this, however, many of us on the committee needed to be convinced whether it was necessary, whether we needed to do this. And the first thing we did is we examined how the department is funded and how this funding has changed over the years. And that gets me to my first handout that I probably should have numbered. You'll see a handout like this that's got a set of numbers on the left side, your left side, my right side, and it just shows a summary of the way we have funded since 1998, how we funded roads, our construction dollars at least. Did everybody find that? And the figures are pretty alarming here in a sense that, as you can see here, we went from 98 to essentially 2005, and we just, at that point, we ended up with a situation where the fuel tax wasn't passed, and we ended up putting the first $7 million of general funds in the 2005 budget year. Then after that, we started putting in copious amounts of money, $79 million, $100 million. We're putting in as much money in general funds that, as we were collecting in fuel taxes. That's how far out of whack we were. Okay. Now you say, well, why is that out of whack? The reason it's out of whack, and we'll talk a lot more about this later, is that 53% of the fuel that is sold in Wyoming is bought by out-of-state people, out-of-state truckers or tourists or whatever it happens to be, somebody with an out-of-state license plate. So when you add all this up, I think we just heard at noon that all these numbers add up to like 700, when you consider AML funding and all that, you come up with 700, almost three quarters of $1 billion that we have sunk in out of general funds, that really you can look at that as 53% has been a donation to our out-of-state travelers. And the amazing thing about it, they have never requested this. This has just been a gift, a surprise gift to them. And, of course, when you travel to other states, you're not granted the same privilege. So that's alarming in itself, but the other reality is that you've heard budget reports and stuff so far this year. We don't have this flexibility. We don't have $100 million to throw in there. Now, we were getting to the point where, you know, in 2007, 2008, you know, we really needed to do something about roads, and we had a backlog of work that was already designed and ready to go, and that was when the President of the United States come up with a stimulus program. And during that stimulus program, you'll see on that right-hand graph, that shows it how stark it is, the funding went up dramatically that year. And the situation was that you had to have shovel-ready projects, and hardly any of the states had shovel-ready projects until they came to Wyoming's application, and we were the first one of all the states to claim that they have had taken all the AM or the economic recovery money that was available, and that's why they have that big arrow up on top. All right, so that's a summary of what's went awry with our funding program as we have kicked this down the road a little bit. There's another graphic in here to show you a little bit about how that interfaces with the cost of doing business when you're in the construction business and you're building roads. We learned during the summer that the cost of building roads is highly correlated with the cost of energy and the inflation rate for those kind of construction projects are far in excess of what it is for general households. So anyway, the top line of this one here, the other black graph, the top line shows what the money expenditures were, and then the other one shows what the expenditures have been in real 1987 dollars. In other words, we deflated all these numbers by using the road construction index, and you can see that the problem is we spent a lot more money, all right? We spent a lot more money, $100 million here and $100 million there out of general funds, and all we were doing is trying to keep up with the real level of construction. That small, or the line below there is the real level, and you can see again that ARRA bump shows up a little bit, but as soon as that money was gone, we're back to where we started, and it seems to be kind of monotonically decreasing. Okay? So that's some background. We also received detailed inventory evaluation reports on the condition of roads under the responsibility of YDOT. And there's 7,700 miles of roads. And generally, the roads that are not on the U.S. highway system, not a U.S.-numbered road, but on a state-numbered road, they're in the worst condition. And the graphs tell the whole story. It shows that every year the general condition goes down and they make projections on where this is going if we decide not to do anything. The result of all this analysis, looking at what's ahead as far as projections of road condition, is that we need $134.5 million a year for maintaining our roads in the condition they are now. Now, so if you think that, you know, you personally, you see the roads in too good a condition, you can cut that number down. Or if you think they're in too poor a condition, then the number goes up. But in their evaluation of the current condition of roads, that if we tread water, so to speak, we can do it for $134.5 million a year. Finally, before we got down to a pricing mechanism, we looked at the efficiency aspects of YDOT. And it was kind of reflected in some of the things that the committee members among the 28 had been hearing. And one thing I remember was that YDOT isn't very efficient, and that they are out hiring employees without us knowing about it or something like that. And so we looked at the employment levels. The employment levels, I think, I suppose there's some departments, but there's no department that I can think of in all the budgets that I'm aware of, and I'm aware of a lot of them. There's no departments that have had a decrease in employees more than YDOT has. I think they've they've reduced their force by about 120 workers over a five-year period or so. So anyway, we looked at that. We looked at equipment and purchasing, because there is anecdotal comments about, well, we think YDOT has too nice of trucks or too new of trucks, and they brought in a comparison of what it costs to run old trucks and to trade them in and to replace them, as opposed to the way they do it with a kind of a leasing arrangement and guaranteed buyback and things like that on not trucks but other trucks and other things as well. Another thing we relied on is, I guess I call it third-party assessments. And I don't think I'm allowed to say the name of it, but there's a highly well-known, regarded think tank that goes around every year or every 2 years, and they examine the efficiency and effectiveness of transportation departments in the United States. And I can just give you some numbers from this study that they've done. And in the years 1998 to 2003, we were the most efficient, and how is it they say that? Cost-effective and efficient of all of the YDOT, or all the departments of transportation in the United States. 98, we were second. 2000, we were first. 2003, we were second. And then if you go to the later years, 2006, 2007, 2008, we were fourth most efficient, sixth most efficient in 2007, and seventh most efficient in 2008. And although we're still pretty high, you can see we're not maintaining our lead as far as number one or two. Another, I don't have any written documentation like I do with these other ones, but we had from the Federal Transportation Program Administration, we had a visitor from there, an individual that worked on, had several states in the Rocky Mountain area, and I don't think he was solicited to say this, but he did tell us as a committee that of all the states he works with, that we stand out as being the most cost-effective and efficient, and the one he worries about the least of all the states that he has jurisdiction over or responsibility for. Another aspect of efficiency is a value engineering study that has been done on, I think there was five projects, and they were, you know, not real small, but they weren't very big projects either. And they had some outside third-party individual come up and say what we could have done different. And they came up with, I don't know, 17 recommendations, and some of them we could, you know, either partly or fully experience, or we could benefit by. And so there's, you know, they come up with things like, oh, the road is too wide, or the shoulders are too wide. You could have saved money there. And you all know what you read in the paper about the safety of Wyoming's roads compared to others, and accident rates and so on. And it's just kind of a policy that there's certain things about Wyoming highways and road conditions and climate conditions that you can't build things necessarily down to the bare minimum specifications and still be safe. But like I say, there are some possible efficiencies that they identified. You know, it's, you know, like on the order of $2 to $3 million on a $60 million set of projects. So there's something there, but it's not a panacea, and it doesn't lend itself to being $134.5 million savings in the budget. There's also, we had heard, you know, we had some people who are pretty skeptical on that committee about this department. We had some questions about whether or not WIDOT has a respectable reputation among the society, among Wyoming people, I guess it was. And you know, people, witnesses would come in and say, well, you know, I just don't think they're building roads well, and I think they're using too many people, and all this anecdotal things. And unbeknownst to me, until just a few days ago, they've been doing survey work on the image that people have of WIDOT and what they think of it. And there's another, I think I've got the color one, but there's a graph that looks something like this. Just pretend what that looked like in black and white, and you'll probably find it in your... Anyway, this is just one question I copied off. It says, this is a survey, pretend you're taking a survey here. In my experience, the condition of state highways in Wyoming has improved in the past 2 years. This survey has been taken in every 2 years since 2002, and they've got the 2008 to 2010, 12 surveys there. And what it is that it's a random telephone survey conducted by the University of Wyoming. And like I say, they do it every 2 years. And, one thing that might be interesting to you is that all of these percentages have a confidence interval of 95% to be, the probability is 95% that it'll be between plus or minus 3% of what you see on that graph. This one here is just self-explanatory. You see that, generally speaking, it's not correct The only thing that's incorrect about this graph, they should have the legend correlate with the size, height of the line. So I had to put in some arrows there. But the red line, the disagree, is the bottom line. I shouldn't say red. The bottom line is disagree. And that, you know, the condition of roads is, you know, relatively, I should say the improvement in the roads the past 2 years is pretty impressive there. The people that agree that the roads have improved the last 2 years, the top line is the most revealing, I think. We started out in 2008 at 72.4. Slight drop, again, since 72.4 is within 3 percentage points of 70.8. It's probably not a significant drop, but it looks like it's not. They don't think it's improved as much as it did the previous 2 years. Then you get to 2012, then you do have a significant drop. And that kind of reflects what these engineering reports that we have been provided shows that their condition of roads has been going down, and it's important. This graph is important to say that people notice it. People are picking up on it. Okay. We also looked at funding sources. This is what you hear when you go out and give speeches all over the state, as I learned. What other ways can you raise money besides what you're talking about? We looked at toll roads briefly, and we got a report from the Highway Administration, the Federal Highway Administration, saying that toll roads isn't a viable option. It's not available anymore. These are started out as demonstration projects quite a number of years ago, and there's none left, and there's no plans for any more. registration fees, I'll say more about that in a little bit. There's another bill out there, another committee bill that I don't know what I'm going to do with yet, but it does adjust registration fees. But my tendency right now is to say, well, I'll probably better stay away from that because people don't really understand it. And maybe there's some people in here that don't understand registration fees. You go in and buy a new car and they say the registration fees is $700 or $600. You think, wow, that's plenty of money there. But out of that registration fee of $600 or $500 or whatever it is you pay for a car, there's only $15 of that goes to YDOT. And you wonder, well, when was the last time they changed the level of that fee? It goes back to 1975. We probably have people in the house who weren't even born then. All right? But anyway, we looked at that, and we did look at it, and we're going to talk about it perhaps later in the session. We also looked at sales tax. You know, one of the reasons we're here for this gas tax is because it's on a per-gallon basis. It's not a sales tax where if the price of fuel goes up, you get a proportionate increase in the sales tax. And that appealed to some people. But the real problem with that, and you'll understand that better when I'm done here, but the real problem with that is that a sales tax will be shifted directly to the consumer. In other words, if we put a 3% sales tax on fuel, it would be felt at the pump at the point of 3%, and there's really hardly any way you can escape that. There's no middleman market conditions that are available to spread that out among other market participants. And after we talk about the fuel tax, you will understand the difference between a sales tax and a fuel tax and the likelihood of it being shifted. All right, we talked about overweight and oversized surcharges. Every time you see one of these trucks going down the road and they got a pilot car, or either got an oversized or, well, they got an oversized load. And if they have a too heavy a load, they got to pay a special surcharge and so on. And we looked at that, and we're pretty much at the top of the, about as high as we can go. We're one of the highest priced states when it comes to those kind of things. Likewise, with registration the apportionment fees with registrations, interstate carriers on, you know, semis and stuff like that. There is an apportionment you get in the state, and is based on what percent of the miles they drive in your state and so on, and we get a rebate of that according to what our rate is. Again, we just raised that. It had to be within the last 5 years because I was here, or maybe it was the last 5 years. But anyway, there's not much there. We also had someone on the committee say, well, you know, you read an article about, I guess you call it, the frontiers of electronic monitoring. That's when you have these overhead cameras, I guess, or scanners, whatever it is, and yet everybody has one of those in their windshield or whatever, and you drive through and they catch you right there, and then they catch you when you leave the state, and they say, well, you're going to pay according to the trip. And, you know, our technology isn't set up for that yet, and in fact no other state is using it now. And there's people kind of using pilot studies and things like that for toll roads and things, but that doesn't lend itself to a state that's got 7,700 miles of roads and that kind of thing. So anyway, we ended up talking most of the time about a fuel tax and to a lesser degree about a registration. Why did we settle on a fuel tax? The reason we settle on it, to make a long story short, is that in the judgment of the committee, it's by far the least painful alternative we have. Number one, it's least likely to be fully shifted to the consumer. And I think that's important, and you'll see why it's important in a little bit. The other thing is important here is, like I said before, 53% of all the fuel sold is to out-of-state motorists. So whatever is ultimately shifted to the consumer, 53% of whatever it is going to be shifted to somebody that isn't us. And that's, I've learned this over by reading my emails, essentially on questioning the fuel tax. You know, the basic philosophy is that the only good tax is a tax that somebody else pays. And to a certain extent, I guess I agree with that. But they should pay their fair share, which they've never had to do before. Now, the other thing is that it's the most cost-effective tax for households. And let's take a look at that. I said 53% of it's bought from or sold to out-of-state buyers. That means there's 47% left here. But of that 47% that's sold, all right, there's part of that goes to commercial use. And we've got a lot of commercial use that's intrastate. You know, we got energy companies, trucking companies. We got lots. Well, you could drive down the interstate just like I do, and you see a lot of Wyoming license plates with commercial outfits. So anyway, out of that 47% that's left, there's an estimated 20 to 25% of whatever is shifted to the consumer is ultimately going to be paid by households. Okay? The other thing I need to warn you about is that there's considerable evidence that suggests we're already being charged for much of this fuel tax, and I'll show that to you later. But let's take a look at where we are today. We have, as you probably know, we have 14 cents on fuel tax, all right? And for whatever reason, our four the people that preceded us in these bodies have decided to revert about 30 to a little bit more than 30% of that 14 cents fuel tax back to local governments. It's an automatic thing. It's a check that comes in the mail to all the counties and all the cities, and there's a formula that's associated with that, you know, so it's fair and balanced throughout the system. All right, so when you take that three-tenths being reverted, the effective state tax that they have to use to spend in YDOT is 9.8 cents. So we say, well, this fuel tax is 14 cents. It's really, as far as YDOT's books are concerned, it's 9.8 cents. All right? Now, what about the states around us? The states around us are generally 10 cents or more above us in fuel taxes. And more than that, none of those states revert any significant amount of money back to local governments. So you take that, the state immediately to our east of where we're sitting here today, their fuel tax is 27 cents, and that's about what they use, that is what they use for their state needs. And we're, in that sense, we're not even in the ballpark. We're at 9.8 cents, they're at 27 cents. And that's probably about where we would be if we didn't have the infusion of some of the other other funding that we have in YDOT right now. All right, now the next thing I want to talk about is, you know, how did you guys on that committee come up with 10 cents? And I always look at that as a suspect figure, too. When I see a round number like 10, I think, well, they just threw something out to see if it'd stick on the wall. And the reason we did that is that to get us up to but not exceeding neighboring states, and there'll be a reason that I'll demonstrate why that's important, that we are on par with the local, or I should say the adjacent states, or the states in this region, so to speak. And that's not the only reason. The other reason is that in terms of purchasing power, in 1998 is when we changed the tax from 9 cents to 14 cents, all right? 1998 will be 15 years by the time this goes into effect. So 15 years ago, that's what we raised the fuel tax. And so, we're, you know, July 2, 1998, we're paying 14 cents. And the purchasing power of 14 cents in 1998 is exactly, or not exactly, within 0.08 of a percentage of being the same purchasing power as 24 cents is today. And if you have questions on that, we'll talk about it later. But we're just looking at what the dollar will buy now compared to what it bought in 1998 to the consumer. As far as the person paying the fuel tax, what you're giving up in purchasing power to buy a gallon of fuel now would, if it's passed, will be the same as it was in 1998. Okay. Now, in gleaning out what the most difficult things that people have with regard to this issue is the perception that a 10 cent addition to the gas tax translates to a 10 cent addition at the pump. And if I have gotten 50 emails, I've gotten 500 that say, you know, I can't afford another 10 cents. Well, you'll see in a little bit that there's no possible way they can translate or shift all that to the consumer. Now, I want to start out with the worst case basis here, folks. Let's just say, which I'm not alleging this is going to happen, let's just say that the full 10 cents is shifted to the consumer. Okay? And the average number, this is an external source, the average number of miles that a household in Wyoming drives every year is 16,000. But let's say that that's low and you can't identify, I wanted to use easy math in the first place. Let's just round it up to 20,000 miles. Now you might say, well, I drive a lot more than that, but I'm talking about household driving. If you're a traveling salesman, you're going to spend more than that. But if you have to drive 20,000 miles and you got an automobile or automobiles that get 20 miles per gallon, how many gallons a year do you have to buy? 1,000 gallons, right? And if the whole 10 cents is shifted for those 1,000 gallons, 10 cents times 1,000, $100, right? So that's the maximum it could be. Now, I will show you in a few minutes that it's more or less, or it's more likely, I should say, much more likely to be closer to half of that. They can they're not going to be able to shift much more than half of that to the Wyoming consumers. So that gets you to $50. But if you just take the worst case basis, the worst you could hurt an average household with this fuel tax is about $8 a month. Okay?
Now, what other anecdotal evidence do we have about the fact that the fuel tax isn't shifted? The last time we changed the price of fuel, which was 15 years ago, 5 cents, you know, people are around there and examined and observed this will tell you that the ultimate shift was about 1 to 3 cents, and they like to settle on 2 cents. So it's somewhere around half of it was shifted in 1998. But yet we have people persisting with the idea that it's going to be fully shifted this time, and I always argue that it's never happened before, so I'm pretty confident that it's not going to happen again. Okay, let's see why I'm right and they're wrong. I want to go to the handout, and you will have, you're probably ready for a color picture now. There's a handout here. It's too bad the chairman doesn't have a... Oh, you do, okay. You got a handout here. It says average rack less taxes and average rack with taxes. And it's in color for a specific purpose. Let me give you a little bit idea about the market structure, because when you talk about shifting taxes, you can't talk about the degree of the shift unless you know what the market structure is. And some of these numbers I'm going to fly out here are going to be hard for you to believe. All the way from, I ran into a legislator not too many days ago here that actually thought that every retail outlet that sells gasoline sends a check to YDOT for their fuel every month. They don't. They buy that gasoline tax paid. They buy it. The suppliers are the ones that pay that tax. All right? Now, so the next question is, how many suppliers do you think we have in Wyoming that are supplying fuels to Wyoming outlets, Wyoming retail outlets? Well, the number is 245. And that probably doesn't surprise you too much. 245 outlets or suppliers are selling that to retail outlets throughout the state. But the thing that will surprise you is that the only out of those 245, 51 of them have a Wyoming address. 51 have a Wyoming address. So that means that approximately just under 80% of the suppliers are interstate marketers of fuel. Okay? They'll have a Colorado address. They'll have a Texas address. They'll have a South Dakota, Nebraska. Every state, and I've got that list up here if you want to see this, I can show you that I've got the list of every one of the suppliers that have paid gasoline tax to us, or gasoline and or diesel tax to us, and there's 245 names on that list, of which only 51 of them are South Dakota or Wyoming addresses. Okay? The rest of them come from places like South Dakota, Montana. Okay. So there, it's very clear that these outside wholesalers or suppliers are selling fuel in all the different states that they do business in. Okay? Now, I want you to look at the top graph. It's a red. The top actually looks, it's really two lines there, but it looks like there's one. And you'll see that this is a diesel graph here. It's the average of rack. Rack means that's the price it is, you know, before it's delivered. Well, there is no such thing. There's no rack that you put fuel on. Maybe there was someday or someday in the past, but it's just a term that they use in the industry at the point of where the tax is paid. All right, so if you look at the average rack in Wyoming and the average rack of surrounding states, okay, the rack price by normally includes the includes all pertinent taxes. So if you look at the surrounding states, we're adding their taxes on, and you look at the Wyoming, they're adding their taxes on, and of course they're adding the national taxes on. And the thing that should stand out and stare at you the worst or most is that there is not much difference in the rack price with the taxes included in Wyoming as opposed to other states. And that's why you should never be surprised when you go to other states that the fuel taxes are no higher there than they are anywhere else. Sometimes, Wyoming has lower prices than the state south of us. Sometimes they're higher priced. But there's no consistent difference in the price because we have lower taxes. All right, now, this is, you ask where these numbers come from. These came, it's sourced. These are empirical numbers. These are numbers that have been out and measured. And you see I don't think it's appropriate for me to put the name of this. It's a proprietary, a company that you can join, and they do proprietary research and data collecting for you. So this tells what the average empirical observed fuel taxes are, or not fuel tax, fuel prices are, at the rack. So I formed the next one. What I did, I wanted to look at the rack less Wyoming taxes, and then I wanted to look at the rack less surrounding taxes, okay, surrounding states. The average of rack less taxes, the surrounding states. All right? Now, you stand back and you use your trifocal or bifocal on this, and you're going to see that the distance between that green line and that, what is it, a purple line or whatever it happens to be, you can see about a 10-cent gap there, right? So what we learned by this empirical exercise is that the rack price in Wyoming, less taxes, is a dime higher than it is in surrounding states. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that's not of the House. That's not an accident, folks. That is because we are not charging as much fuel tax at the state level as what surrounding states are. That 10 cents is not going to be left on the table and given back to us. They don't have, these interstate marketers of fuel don't have they don't have a price list in their glove compartment or their tanker and say, well, you're Wyoming, so we're going to charge you a lower price. The proof is right here. And that effectively causes our gas tax or our price, less taxes, to be 10 cents higher than everybody else. Now you say, well, how can this be? Is this because of the nefariousness of dealers, or is there some other reason? Now I want you to turn to page 2. And that starts out with the term hypothetical example. And it's an easy example. Let's just take a look at it. We've got a hypothetical wholesaler here, hypothetical supplier, that is selling 1,000 gallons in Wyoming. He's selling 1,000 gallons in his other state. All right. Now we're just going to go through the arithmetic, and what we're going to develop here is a pricing model, just a straight economics 101 pricing model that explains what you see on this front graph. All right. Now the state tax per gallon I put in 14, and I just picked a 24 for some state around us, surrounding state. And pre-tax refinery cost, what they have to pay for the raw material itself, I just assumed is $3.30 a gallon. Okay? So now let's look at what kind of cost this guy's incorporated so far. We've got a pre-tax fuel cost for Wyoming customers. He's going to have to pay $3,300 for, right? And another $3,300 for the out-of-state 1,000 gallons. So we're up to 6,600 gallons there, right? Now, we look at the total pre-tax fuel cost. The total state tax due. I'm on line 7 of this handout. The total tax due in the Wyoming, this is a check that they got to write out at the end of the quarter, all right? They got to write out $140 to Wyoming DOT, and they have to write a check out for $240 to the other state. So the amount of state taxes they're committed to pay is $380, right? Then you go to the next one. This is a federal tax. That's line number 8. And that tax is 18.6 cents a gallon, so that's the same for both states. And you add that on there, and you get $372. All right? So the post-tax cost of the fuel that he's marketing to these Wyoming and other states is going to be $7,352, but that doesn't leave him anything for his expenses. He's got overheads here. He's got expenses of being a supplier and delivering and so on. And he needs to expect a reasonable profit, right? So we call that a targeted contribution to profit and overhead. And I have just assumed he wants 30 cents a gallon to cover his overhead and his targeted profit. So now he's up, when you add the overheads in and targeted profit, you're up to $7,952. Now, to generate that $7,952, you've got to divide $7,952 by the 2,000 gallons you're going to sell, right? And that gets you to $398. So there's the same price. That's commensurate with the top set of numbers on the graph up here. You know, those the reason they don't superimpose themselves on one another is just there's stochastic disturbances that just, you know, you can't repeat events like that identically. And the sampling process causes it as well. So anyway, they're charging the Wyoming retailers $398. They're charging the out-of-state $398. And then for a final check, we say, what is the pre-tax state price? You'll look on that page. That's on line 13. In Wyoming, it's $384. In the other state, is $374, right? So then you go back to the first graph, and you see, yes, I've got an explanation of why the green line lies 10 cents above that purple line. All right, now this is when it really gets interesting, folks. Unless you've already made your mind up on this issue, it really gets interesting. In this example, we'll go down to around line 20. I'm going to say, let's just shock the system by putting Wyoming's tax up to 24 cents instead of 14 cents, all right? So we're going through the same arithmetic. I don't have to spend as much time doing it. But anyway, the only difference in the tables at least through line 25 or 26 is that instead of a 140 being in line 25, we now got a 240 in there. All right, so we have 480 and we have 372 for the federal tax, just like before. And I'm assuming he still wants the same contribution to profit and overhead, and we'll talk about whether that's likely or not. But anyway, this out-of-state supplier of fuel is still wants a $600 contribution to profit and overhead, and that means his required total revenue has gone up to $8,052. So you take $8,052 and you divide that by 2,000 gallons, and you come up with $4.03. Now there's a number of things you need to do here. What Wyoming did is raise their price by 10 cents, right? And the price was $398 in the upper part of this table, but now it's $403. So what was the amount of the shift as a result of that? 5 cents, right? It just happened it was 5 cents because I used 1,000 and 1,000. And, of course, if we had a supplier out of state that did 10,000 out of state, then it would be even less. But the point is, there's a lot of points here we can make. You need to understand. The point is that because we produced, with our 14-cent tax, a disparate cost structure for this supplier of fuel, he's been able to capitalize on this with his out-of-state customers, or out-of-state to us at least. The other thing to note from this is that we're going to get, with this example, we'll get a 5-cent shift upward in the price of the fuel, but so are the people in the other states, because why? There's no question in states that, or I should say communities that surround Wyoming, they have experienced a monetary benefit by our low taxes. And I'll say it again, and I can prove it. Again, you know, it's basic economics. If you consider your own business, if you have a disparate cost by one of your, from one of your customers, you can use that abnormally low cost as a bargaining chip in other for other customers you have. I used to be an economic consultant, and now that I don't do much of that, I can safely admit that I did a little of that once in a while. You know, if you find an easy customer that the job isn't going to take a lot of busy work, you know, you can shade the price down with the idea, or shade the price up with the idea that you can, the job you really want, you've got some extra flex there, and that's kind of the flex I'm talking about here. Okay. So anyway, how can this be possible? The reason it's possible is because the suppliers are what controls the price or the amount of tax is shifted to the consumer. And more than that, we have almost 80% of our suppliers are out of state, and we're a small fish in their pond. And that means that this tax will be distributed throughout the marketplace. Now, the one thing I didn't tell you is that the contribution to profits, when these kind of things happen, what happens to the contribution to profits competitively? Well, what happens is you've got to shave your profit level that you're trying to achieve, which means that, if anything, this example would suggest that the price shock would probably be less than 5 cents. I'm not saying it's going to be 5 cents, but what I can guarantee you, there is no scenario. There's absolutely no scenario that you can give me with any, and you hear these, you know, people around here out in the lobby and stuff saying it's going to be shifted to the consumer, it's going to be a job killer and all that. There's nothing further from the truth, and that's what I'm here to talk about, is the truth. This full shifting is impossible. Okay. I guess the only other thing I'll say at this juncture is that fuel tax itself is the only tax that I've ever seen around here that enjoys widespread support in the state, except for, well, you know, you look at the business community, they all know what runs on roads. Tourism runs on roads. We had anecdotal testimony that you know, people on the ground that are in the tourist business constantly hear all year long that I didn't go through this state as I made my trip to Wyoming, or made my trip west. I didn't go through this state, but I went through Wyoming, and the reason I did is because Wyoming has better roads. So there's an economic dimension to this. There's a positive externality that's imparted to the business community when we do have good roads. One more example, I guess I'll call it the Madden perplex. And I've never figured this out, but essentially the Madden perplex says that the more you are the more opposed you'll be to the fuel tax. And the more fuel you buy, the more you're in favor of the fuel tax. You know, and you'll see that reflected in the letters and emails you get where they'll say that. You know, and just to demonstrate it, I talked to a guy not too long ago that bought 719,000 gallons of fuel last year, and he's for it. And I said, well, why would you be for something like that? And he says, because good roads save us money. And they also save you money, too, and keep that in mind. Now, the final thing... I guess the final thing I want to talk about is I would call it an unintended consequence of having fuel taxes lower than the. Now I got to find my. Oh, here it is. There's a graph here. No, it isn't a graph. It's a map. And the cartographer wasn't much of a map drawer, but you get the idea. Do you find that map? All right. What this has to do with is the IFTA, it's called. It's the International Fuel Tax Agreement. All right. And this was necessitated quite a while ago. Well, it wasn't necessitated. It wasn't congressionally mandated or anything. But the deal was that, you know, these big carriers that use a lot of fuel and wear the roads out and stuff, we needed to have some rhyme or reason to where the taxes were paid other than where that was purchased at the pump. And I think this is a good map to kind of show, excuse me, what happens here. There's a number, that line going through the bottom part of Wyoming, that's I-80 there, right? And what this IFTA does is that the taxes are collected, or the taxes will be paid for the fuel at the point of where it's purchased. But it's just temporarily in their hands because it's going to have to be rectified as to where that transport truck goes after it leaves that gas station. And what's true here, what happens in the real world is that every state is entitled to their reimbursement of fuel tax that they have in their state according to the number of miles that truck drives in their state. Okay? And there's some giant computer system or something that balances those books. And here's what actually happens. I don't want to go through those things, but that's not important. But I just want to give an example here. It's very important you see this and see what happens. Put yourself in the cab of a semi here. And say you're traveling from east to west and you stop at this imaginary Phillips station near the border in Nebraska, right at the border, and you fill your truck up with 67 gallons of fuel. All right. So what you get out of that is, or what Nebraska has, is $17.76. Right. If you take 67 gallons times 26.5 cents, you come up with $17.76. Now, Nebraska can't go to the bank and spend that money, right? Because that gas is not burnt. You go by where the fuel is burnt, not where it's purchased. So at mile marker 402 out here, that truck starts going through Wyoming until it gets to mile marker zero. And they tell me that's where it is, 402 miles, all right? Wyoming is entitled to some money here, because they drove that truck, but they didn't buy a lick of fuel here. Now, the amount that will be transferred in this IFTA agreement is 14 cents times 402 miles, okay? So you take 14 times 402, and that's $938. Okay, for that semi to go across Wyoming, we ended up with $9.38, whereas $17.76 was collected before. So there's a balance there. I don't see the balance. But if you take $17.76 minus $9.38, there's $8 and some cents left over, right? Now, that isn't a check that will be sent to this guy because he saved so much money going through Wyoming. But it'll go into his account as a credit, all right? It'll be on an account as a credit, so when he goes to another state that has high-priced taxes, he can start using that account to help him through that state without him having to write a check. All right? Now, let's just say that he didn't do that. He missed the turnoff and went to Pine Bluffs and bought fuel. Okay? He went to Pine Bluffs and he bought fuel to go 402 miles, 67 gallons. That's what it takes at 6 miles per gallon, is 67 gallons. So he fills up in Pine Bluffs or thereabouts, and he goes across the state, and Wyoming got their $9.38, right? But what's the difference in the way he chose where to buy the fuel? The difference is he has no credits left over to spend somewhere else. So if you're a smart truck driver, you go buy your gas, your fuel in Nebraska rather than in Wyoming. One more example on the same map. Let's say it's at this point in Nebraska, he buys not 67 gallons. Let's say he buys 350 gallons. I guess those semis can hold that much fuel. But he buys 350 gallons of fuel at the border of Nebraska there, and he drives through Wyoming. And let's watch what happens to that money. You take the 350 gallons times 26.5 cents. I don't know what that is, but it's a lot of money. But he's got that much money there that he has paid Nebraska in taxes. And incidentally, none of that money, whatever it calculates out to be, is going to be Nebraska's money. It's all going to be transferred somewhere else. But this guy here has decided his truckload goes to California. So watch what happens to that tax money that he paid in Nebraska. He'll drive through Wyoming, and out of this balance, he will spend $9.38, right? And then he gets to Utah, and it's 24.5 cents, so it's fairly comparable to Nebraska. But at least he's not going in the hole, right? He's still got a credit, and he's using the credits that he got by purchasing the fuel in Nebraska to get him through Utah. And then he gets to Nevada, and we're up to 27.8. So if you look at Utah and Nevada combined, it's kind of a wash for him, isn't it? He's paid 26.5 cents back in Nebraska, and he's about there going to Nevada. So he's not in the hole yet. But he does get in the hole when he gets to California. And he thanks his lucky stars that Wyoming's tax is only 14 cents because he's got money to spend in California above and beyond the 26.5 that he saved up on the trip by going through Wyoming. And he doesn't have to write a check out in California to cover the gap between, or at least the check will be smaller. All right? So if you've ever heard that, like I have, from people that deal in fuel along the interstate, where they say there's a tendency for truckers to prefer not to buy fuel in Wyoming, now you know. So the moral of the story is, anytime you build an artificial low tax in the fuel industry, when you recognize the rules and regulations of IFTA, all you're doing is costing your business people money, and you're costing your department YDOT money, and you got to make it up with general funds and things of that nature. And that's where we are today, and that's where House Bill 69 is in front of you. Now, when we get in, I'm about done here. When we get into the debate, you know, I suppose there might be people that will come back to this and say, well, yeah, but it's still going to be 10 cents. Well, it's not going to be 10 cents. That's when you want to flip open this page 2 right behind this colored graph and look at it. It's not a budget breaker. I'll guarantee you, in 2013, people are going to be spending 80 cents to a dollar less in fuel whether this passes or not. So it's not a budget breaker. It's not a job killer, all these kind of words that you hear around. And I guess at this point I'd rest my case and let everybody else have their time.
Thank you, Chairman Madden, for the detailed and thorough explanation. Friends of the 62nd, we have no standing amendment on this bill, but we do have 6 Committee of the Whole amendments. Representative Greer, we are on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1.
Madam Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 69 and ask for your favorable consideration. Before I begin, I should state that my undergraduate degree was in economics, and I very much appreciate what the professor put in front of us, and now you all understand why I went into law. While I'm in favor of this bill, I am skeptical of the use of our highway funds. And so my amendment is intended to put together a mechanism to ensure that the funds received from the fuel tax are used to maintain the roads in their current condition. As I think we heard early on, each one of the districts already has a statement of consideration of the roads. They know the condition that they're in. And this, the idea of this bill, and it really, or this amendment, and it just sits there for a year. And I just felt that was appropriate because then we could address it in the upcoming sessions rather than have this carry on for a long time. The concept is, and I think I'll draw your attention to this, is that until June 30th, 2014, that's the first year, these funds are going to be deposited that are attributable to the highway the funds associated with the increase in the fuel tax will be deposited into a fund and only be expended to maintain the state highway system in the current existing condition as of the effective date of this act. And these funds are to be deposited, and they're there to supplement and not supplant the funds currently budgeted by the Transportation Commission. So they're not, I don't want the opportunity for them to take from their right pocket and put into their left. I want what they're using now to maintain the highways to stay there, and I want these funds to come in, and I want it to maintain the highways. I don't want this to go into fancy guardrails, as you've heard me say, additional shoulders, these roadside improvements, all that stuff. If the goal of this tax is to make sure our roads do not deteriorate, to help the commerce within this state stay strong, I want to make sure those funds go there. And so the Department of Transportation will report to the Joint Appropriations concerning this matter, and I would hope that they'll have the chance to review this in detail and then take any appropriate action as we go through this process. So that's my amendment. It's an oversight to make sure these funds go where they say they want them to go, where they've been telling us they want them to go. And with that, I'll take any questions on this amendment.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Is there anything in this amendment that will prevent YDOT from using any funds, other existing funds from other sources, to pay for those pet projects that you're opposed to?
Madam Chairman, no, they're not. And I know we have other bills coming along to place this department under closer scrutiny. Again, I'm looking at the funds that have been budgeted and are set aside for repairs and maintenance. Those can't be touched. They have to stay there. And then the additional tax will go on top of that to fill that void. But, you know, if they get federal funds from somewhere else or whatever the case may be, this amendment does not address that issue.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll just say that as far as I'm concerned, I think I'm sure as far as YDOT is concerned, this is a friendly amendment. There's no, it's kind of a transparency amendment. You know, we're kind of covered by the fact that it's guaranteed in the Constitution that we can't spend taxes raised on fuel taxes on anything but roads. And but this does, you know, this gets a reporting process started, and they do reports all the time. It's not an issue, and I think it's a good amendment, and hope you'll support it.
Representative Goggles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a question for the bringer of the amendment. Your amendment says until June 30th, 2013. The bill says the effective date is July 1, 2013. Excuse me, that your amendment is 2014, so that's approximately 1 year. In that 1 year, they're going to be collecting this tax should it be enacted. And I guess my question is how do we measure the effectiveness of this amendment if they're only collecting it for 1 year.
Representative Greer?
Thank you for the question. And quite frankly, I wouldn't be opposed if that was later amended out to a further time frame. Really what I was just looking at is making sure while we get into this process that we've got a mechanism in place to hold it under scrutiny. And I may be wrongfully so, but I put a little bit of trust into the Appropriations Committee to come back with recommendations, you know, a year from now.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. In addressing the amendment on Section B, line 21 down through line 25, I would like to have some assurance that the way that this is written, that it does not impede the funds that are by statute assignable to county government and city government, to make certain that the money that is generated by this just doesn't go to the highway department for its use and explanation, but rather that the formula is operative and that this segregation does not impede that allocation.
Representative Greer?
Madam Chairman, good question. And I'm just trusting our drafting service on this. It was my understanding that this is just for that portion that is assigned to YDOT and does not affect the city and counties. And that's my full intent with it, and that's what I understood how this to be drafted. That it did not affect the distributions to local government. And I think to do that, you have to look at the structure of the bill where you already have those divisions in there. And then this comes later in the bill under Section 2, under a separate section.
Chairman Madden. Mike.
Oh, sorry. I think it's already taken care of. If you look at line 10 in the Greer Amendment, the funds deposited to the highway fund says until June 30, 2014, any funds deposited into the highway fund that are attributable, and the state allocations are not deposited in the highway fund.
Seeing no further discussion, we're on committee of the whole amendment number one. All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye. All those opposed? The amendment is adopted. We are now on committee of the whole amendment number two. Representative Swanser.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move committee of the whole amendment number two to House Bill 69. It simply just asks that report that the previous representative asked for is also delivered to the Transportation Committee. I would stand for any questions.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think this is an appropriate amendment. All of these routine matters do go through transportation in a customary fashion, and you know, I think it was probably an oversight on the part of the drafter of Amendment Number 1. So I urge you to vote for this.
We are on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The amendment is adopted. We are on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 3. Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I asked for a simple amendment, and this thing looks like an economist wrote it. It's and I'd like to move my amendment, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 3 to House Bill 69. And all this does is sunsets the tax in 6 years. We had discussion when we were in committee, and there was concern that 3 years wasn't enough time. I moved it to 5 and came close to passing in committee. This is 6 years because it would put us, instead of in a budget session to rediscuss it, the legislature would discuss it in a general session. My constituents seem to be fairly evenly divided. within agriculture really evenly divided, either adamantly for or adamantly opposed or divided right down the middle. The biggest concern most of the people have is transparency and accountability by our government. And we're the ones that should have oversight of this. And if we're able to bring that with a taxation bill, I think that the public will approve more of this tax than otherwise. Another little ingredient here, I think it helps to bring accountability to the construction industry. We haven't discussed that at all. I do think that it will, if we review this in 6 years and decide whether or not we're going to renew the tax, and we feel there's a good buy involved in it, we'll renew the tax. But it'll just help in that process of finding the best deal we can for the construction of highways. So anyway, with that, I would stand for any questions.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think I was one of them that voted no in the committee on this. And to me, it kind of belied the concept of getting long-term funding for YDOT. But since the sponsor, we had it at 5 years, and I they have 5-year STIP plans, the transportation planning programs that they work on, and they work on a 5-year window, and I thought it should be at least that long, and 6 years is fine. It's I don't know. I don't think that there's any problem with it. If you want to vote for it, that's fine. Or, I mean, it's fine either way. I mean, you can vote for it.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would urge you to vote against this. The whole part of getting the fuel tax into place is that we have long-term funding, that the contractors in the state of Wyoming will know that there's a stream coming. We don't have to wonder in 6 years. And for those of you who have been here through the years, we put these sunset dates on, and I'm not sure what the percentage is that goes away, but very seldom. But I think we've demonstrated the need. I can't imagine that we're going to need less in 6 years unless we have some great technology that comes around. And if that does happen, then, of course, we will address that as it comes. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Well, Madam Chairman, I would submit that we have oversight over this all the time, and we can take it off next year. We can take it off the year after. We can take it off any time we want to. So I don't think we need a sunset provision that sets it out there at 6 years. And if the contractors want to be insecure, then be insecure, because we might take it off next year.
Representative Beckland.
I would maintain that in 6 years we would look at it, and most of the taxes that are put in place don't go away, and most of the sunsets don't go away either. If the tax is responsibly spent, it'll continue, is my guess, and I would ask for your support of this amendment. Thank you.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is kind of a judgment call on it. I don't see it's going to harm the bill. I think my amenability is kind of tempered by the fact that there are some people in here that are sensitive to this, and it's critical, and they're deciding how to vote. I don't see any problem leaving it in, because I know the sun never sets in Wyoming. So.
Sensing that you are ready for the question, all those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 3, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 3 has failed. Division being called, all those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 3 has passed. We are on Committee of the Whole. Oh, wait a minute. Excuse me. Oh, I stand corrected. Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 3 has failed. We are on Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 4. Representative Madden.
Madam Chairman, I move fourth reading Committee of the Whole Amendment number 4 to House Bill 69. All this is a correction that the LSO staff discovered needed to be done, and they just ran it into me and told me to make this kind of just an oversight in the terms. And if there's no questions, I'd move the question.
All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Number 4, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Amendment Number 4 passes. We are on Committee of the Whole Number 5. Representative Summers.
Madam Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 5 to House Bill 69 and ask for its favorable introduction. Fellow House members, our highways are the lifeblood of our state and are paramount to our social and economic well-being. House Bill 69 has been sold to the Wyoming people as the fix for our highway system, even though it falls far short of the $109 million additional dollars YDOT suggests it needs annually to maintain Wyoming's highways in their current state, and in fact only provides around $47 million annually to the highway fund. This amendment changes the fuel tax increase proposed in House Bill 69 from 10 cents to 5 cents on both gas and diesel. In addition, this amendment would divert one half of the 1% statutory severance tax stream headed to the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund to the Highway Fund. If you look at the information sheet, which was handed out with HD 20 written on the top, you will find the calculations that are basis for this amendment. The 5 cent increase in gas and diesel tax will generate nearly $36 million, of which $8 million goes to counties, over $3 million to municipalities, $600,000 to state parks, and the remaining nearly $24 million to the highway fund. The severance tax diversion would put over $71 million into the highway fund. Couple that with roughly $24 million from the fuel tax increase, and we would be providing the highway fund with about $95 million annually. So I'm going to kind of go through my handout. Once again, that's HD 20 handout. I'm just going to show you what sheets are which. The top sheet is kind of LSO's projections of how much the taxes would bring. The top part of that is broken down into gas, diesel, and then the total gas and diesel with the bottom line. In 2014, it'd be $35,948. 2015 going to 37, 2016 going to 38. The next line down would be LSO's estimate based on January 2013 Craig forecast. Projected revenue from diversion of one half of the statutory 1% from the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund to the Highway Fund. That would provide 71.4 in 2014's, 74 in million in 2015, 74.5 in 2016. The bottom box can be a little confusing, but basically the first line of that is and it's in parentheses because it's a takeout, so it's $71,400,000 from the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. I'm just going to go through 14. So the highway would receive a total of $95,118,000. Counties, $8,213,000. Municipalities, $3,381,000. State parks, $634,000. The bottom line is just a reflection of the total amount of the fuel tax increase, which is reflected in the boxes above. I have I'm going to go through the next page. The next page kind of is, and I'm not going to go into detail, is simply a breakdown of the projected revenue from the 10-cent fuel tax. The third page is kind of a breakdown of the permanent mineral trust fund diversion. If you took the 1% in its entirety, if you took a 0.5%, or if you took a 0.25%, if you carved off those various amounts, so that kind of gives you an idea. The next one is a Wyoming Department of Transportation biennium 11, October 2010 through September 2012, and it kind of shows the breakdown between user fees, federal grants, mineral royalties, and severance taxes, and the other funding sources that go into an operating budget whose revenue is over $1 billion. And I just wanted to point out that highway user fees, and that includes fuel tax, registration fees, driver's license fees, all those listed in that big box at the top, are over $294 million, while the mineral royalties and severance taxes are around $146 million. I would suggest that this amendment would kind of even that playing field a little. We still would have an increase in fuel tax. I think we as users need to pony up money. I believe the state also needs to maybe divert some money from its stream into savings and kind of try to fully fund highways. I think we're doing a disservice to our highways in the long run if we don't try to do this. Once again, I would ask this amendment, if you read the amendment, it would have deleted on the line 2 of the amendment would delete Eklund's committee amendment, but it failed, so that's why it was in there. Because we've had so many amendments, obviously mine would have been in conflict with another, so that's why that's there. Once again, I would ask for favorable consideration of this amendment, and I would stand for questions, though I'm sure I probably can't answer all of them. So thank you.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I respect the good gentleman for bringing the amendment today, but I do rise to a point of order, and I wanted to allow him the privilege to finish his explanation of the amendment. But I do believe that the amendment is outside the scope of the bill, as it does bring into the conversation this statutory diversion that's not addressed in the catch title. So I would call for a Rules Committee hearing. Sorry, Mr. Speaker.
The chair agrees. I believe it's also outside, so I guess the Rules Committee.
The ruling of the Rules Committee is that it is outside of the catch title. The amendment is out of order. Therefore, we are on... What's that? The amendment will be withdrawn.
Albert.
We are on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 6, Representative Hutchings.
Madam Chairman, I moved my amendment to House Bill 69, and I ask for your favorable consideration. Based on what I see in the bill is titled Highway Funding, and I see that based on pages 2 and lines 7 and line 3, or excuse me, page 3, lines 1 through 24, page 4, lines 1 through 7 include funding for, or excuse me, distribution that will further decrease the amount going to highway maintenance. So I would like to propose an amendment that would remove that section altogether. Stand for questions.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, I would urge caution on this, and I'll explain why. What this deals with is what we have done since 1998, I think it was, where the issue really arises from the fact that the fuel tax is for on-road use, okay? And we've got people that buy fuel for other reasons besides on-road use. Now, the question is, who does that? Boats, marinas, and things like that, obviously they're not driving their boat on the road. Another one is snowmobiles. They're not driving the road on the, or snowmobiles on the road, and ATVs and similar type vehicles as well. And the situation is if we tax off, I should say, fuel that is used off-road and then go spend it on an on-road use, we've kind of violated the spirit of the thing. And what normally happens when that occurs is that they come in and ask for a refund. Okay, and a refund is similar to agricultural uses where you're using fuel in the field or whatever, and they are issued a refund. And it's a manageable problem, or a manageable situation, I should say. You can do it. It's a lot of work, and it takes a lot of administrative time to conduct that. And clearly, it isn't practical to give refunds to every snowmobile owner or every ATV owner, and the bookwork would be terrible, but they would still be entitled to it. So what they agreed to, why don't you take the amount of money that is used for these purposes, an estimated amount of money, and it's developed in a number of ways. They had the university do a study about, I think it was 8 years ago or 9 years ago, of what a fair amount of that would be, and the number of registrations of these things and so on. And they come to an agreement on this, and they says, well, instead of us demanding a refund, why don't you just take the fuel tax that we pay through the gallons we burn in these things and do it some way to improve our facilities. So snowmobile trails is part of that, and boat launching facilities, and it's a way better situation for that reason. They're happy and we're happy. And the other thing is, and this is a little bit deep, and if you don't understand it, I'll understand why, because I didn't understand it for a long time. But the amount of money we get from the Federal Highway Administration is a function of what fuel tax we raise through the fuel tax itself. All right? And if we issue a refund, we've got to deduct the amount that we're refunding from that total. So it would cut down in that formula to just when they decide up in the, you know, Potomac River about how much YDOT, how much funding will go from the federal government to YDOT, that's part of the calculation is how much fuel tax was paid. And it's paid net of refunds. So there's really no reason for this. It isn't going to help the road building account, as the sponsor of the amendment said. It would, you know, refunded is refunded. And so anyway, I would urge you not to support this. Thank you.
Representative Hutchings?
Madam Chairman, I just wanted to make it clear that I still would like the distribution on the 14 cents, but for this bill in particular, House Bill 69, that the distribution should go only to highway maintenance. Just wanted to make that clear. Thank you.
All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 6, please say aye. All those opposed, no?
No.
The amendment fails. That concludes the Committee of the Whole Amendments. We are on discussion of the bill. Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just looking at this, we've been talking about highway funding for years, and we just heard the number of $740 million since 2005 that we've put in highway funding. So I made some notes and thoughts with emails, and I even have a solution for it. But with all the graphs, charts, our roads are in pretty good shape right now. We have good roads in Wyoming. The Wyoming families have a set income. They have a budget that they have to live within. And I'm asked, why can't some state agencies try to do the same and live within their budget? And where do we go to get the 71% increase or the 10-cent increase? And the good chairman pointed out, you know, there's a lot of people that pay it, but it's going to go back a good point or a good share of it to the Wyoming families. And in a down economy, I'm not really sure if this is the time to do that. And different districts that we all come from, we've been told different things of whether we support it. Some legislators said, yes, I'm going to. Some others said, no, I'm not going to. And I think that just, you know, our constituents tell us. I sent out a survey when I was running in my county, and it came back about 100% that they want less government, less taxes. They just don't want the state overwhelming them with things. The good chairman also brought up just, and I wish I had something in detail, and maybe we'll get it for another reading, but he talked about trying to make YDOT be as efficient as it could be with a $1 billion budget. Some of the things that, you know, if our roads are really the things that we need to be working about, and you've heard some of these that I'll bring up, we have some pretty elaborate truck parking in our county that they made, and I asked, if we're spending this many $1 million on truck parking and we need the roads, why are we doing this? Well, that was just brought up. That's something. It'll be more convenient. More convenient, and it is a safety issue, I will admit, when the call the sisters are closed over there. But we've been getting along without it. And right now in a down economy to do some extravagant things, somebody else pointed out the new YDOT shops that are built around the state. Pretty elaborate, and the upgrading that's going on. doing some costly repairs on not-so-used highways, state highways. Another constituent brought up, we replaced miles of our interstate fence just because it's on a rotation every so many years. We replace it. Some of the ranching community said, wow, wish we could do that, replace good fence because that's our rotation schedule. Well, if we're interested in saving money for roads, the good chairman also brought up equipment. I would like to, another thing that been told is the duplication of employees in our local shops, in our regional shops, and in here in Cheyenne. The amount of duplication we have of employees. And so I just bring some points up that there are some things, and I think the good chairman did make reference to some of these. But I have a solution that I will bring forth as a budget amendment, and the solution is to get YDOT $50 million, which is about what this fuel tax will get. Get that for 1 year. But along with that, the other part is hire, do a real in-depth efficiency performance study that's going to cost some money. I've heard from people, even downstairs talking to them, there are people that come in and get right in your business and figure out what's going on, how we could make improvements, or if we're running as good as we can, that would help me understand if we need to increase taxes in a down economy. So with that plan that I'll be bringing as a budget amendment when we get the JAC report, I just urge a little caution right here in this economy with our families. And let's get a good efficiency report. Let's fund them for this 1 year. Let's leave all our fundings intact. You could mention, you know, the one attempt by a good representative to take some permanent mineral trust fund savings out. I just don't think right now is the time to do that. People tell me we're in a rainy day, we got to use these rainy day. I'm really afraid that we're looking ahead at some rainy days. I'm not sure we have a rainy day with the generous budgets that we've been funding for the last few years. So I urge caution with this and appreciate your indulgence.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As I told you all in my introductory speech, no one wants to pay taxes and no one wants to vote to raise taxes. But I want you to picture something in your mind's eye, and that's a table. And sitting on top of that table is a rather portly hippopotamus wearing a T-shirt that says education. And next to that rather portly hippopotamus is a rather portly elephant wearing a T-shirt that says healthcare. And then beside it on that table is a honey badger, a great big honey badger, wearing a T-shirt that says prisons. And then right next to that is a bucking horse, a rather portly bucking horse, dressed in brown and gold, that's wearing a T-shirt that says University of Wyoming. And then right next to that is just a whole collection of small animals jumping up and down on the table, wearing T-shirts that say all other items in the budget. And then I want you to look under that table and see what's holding that table up. And it's one tree. And that one tree is 80% of the energy industry in the state of Wyoming. And then I want you to imagine a beaver wearing a T-shirt that says federal regulations gnawing on that tree. You now have a picture of Wyoming's tax policy. What this tax is it's a user fee. It's a self-supported user fee that supports our highways, wholly independent of our tree that's being gnawed at by the beaver. Now, I did some research before I stood up because even I have some rudimentary
internet skills. In that big city in the state to the southwest of us that is named after condiments and a lake, gas prices, the two cheapest gas prices there are $2.53 a gallon and $2.69 a gallon. Now, in the city right across the border in Wyoming, famous for fireworks and firewater and a bookstore, the gasoline is $2.73 a gallon, higher by about, 4 cents a gallon, although the gas tax in that state is 24.5 cents per gallon, and our gas tax is 14 cents per gallon. Just south of us in the city, named after a fort, where their gas tax is 20.5 cents per gallon, the gas there is $2.59. The gas in this town is $2.59. I couldn't find anything about gas prices in the town in the furthest southeast part of the state, but across the border, in the town named after the bluff, gas, where gas tax is 26.5 cents a gallon, is $2.51 a gallon, which is cheaper than it is in this city. In the part of the state where I live, right across the border in a town where Indians caught fish with long sticks, gas was $2.69 a gallon. Right across the border in the little town, right on the border, 18 miles away, it's $2.67, although their tax is 10 cents per gallon higher. In Montana, the state to the north, the town right up the interstate from the first big town that you get to, gas was $2.94. In the town on our side, it was $2.85, although their gas tax is 14 cents per gallon more. And then on the west side of the state, in the resort areas, in the town named after two waterfalls, gas is $2.65 a gallon. And in the ski town in the northwest, it's $2.89 a gallon. If you don't believe that we're already paying this tax right now, you're fooling yourself. We are paying the tax right now. The citizens of Wyoming are paying that tax right now. The 52% of the people from out of state who are driving through our town are paying the tax right now. It's just not going to fix our roads. And so I'd submit to you, ladies and gentlemen, that you heard the economist lecture, and he's a brilliant man, and can't give a lecture in less than a class period. But his analysis is exactly correct, and the empirical data bears it out. We're already paying the tax. Ladies and gentlemen, let's collect the tax and put it to our highways.
Representative Kirkbeck.
Madam Chairwoman, you've heard very learned discussion all afternoon. Now I'm going to present the two simplest arguments you could imagine. To me, it sounds like the creation of a matching fund, and I like matching funds. We could either take all 100% of Wyoming citizens' money to do the inevitable road repair, or we can get 53% of a pot of money, and if we'll put up 47%, we'll have a matching fund to accomplish the same purpose. I think we're talking about a matching fund. I like matching funds. The other thing I'd say, if this tax ends up costing individuals money, it's because they got a lot of good out of the tax. They did a lot of driving, they're going to pay more, but they benefited more from the whole system. A good transportation system in Wyoming is a necessary evil. So if people have questions about transparency, that can be dealt with in other ways. If people have questions that the standards are too high, that can be dealt with in other ways. But this discussion about the fuel tax, it's a chance to do something that really is substantial, really lasts for our state as we take care of the property we're charged to take care of. So I move the passage of the bill. I don't move it, but I support the passage of the bill. Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, our roads in Wyoming are really, really important.
We probably travel more in the lower 48 per person, probably even than Texas, because we're scattered further apart. We have smaller communities, and frankly, it's like they say, it's one big city with long streets here in Wyoming. We need good roads. But I do have a problem with the amount of this tax increase without looking at more ways to save money within this department that has something over $1 billion of spending per year. You know, all the studies that are taking place, the road I'm familiar with that connects Fremont County with Teton County, it took them 7 years to build that road. I think a lot of the work and money spent on that road was for pretty much ridiculous studies that really made no difference, but it added to the cost of the roads. We need to push back on some of these issues, and we're not. Instead, we're just raising more money and throwing more money at it. Right now, this is a greater than 70% tax increase to our citizens in Wyoming. Their taxes just went up January 1st. I just can't support this with that understanding. I just did a little quick search looking at the absolute lowest price of gas here in Cheyenne, $2.55, the absolute lowest price of gas in Fort Collins, it was $2.71. Well, that's greater than the price difference and the taxes between the two states. So again, 70% tax increase, I'm not going to support that.
Representative Swanser.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to answer some of the questions that have been posed to the body. One of them is about the fencing system. And, of course, it's on a regular scheduled basis because the safety of the highways depend on that. But we've had some discussion about the department itself. And I just want to inform you that the commission that oversees that department, and be aware there is a commission that oversees that department for a check and balance system, they just hired a firm out of the Hoosier State, and they brought in several engineers to evaluate five of their construction projects. Now, the good part and the bad part of what they found in those studies as they did that whole engineering project was that they were able to save Wyoming citizens, I think it was $5 million. But the really good part of that is that's a really small percentage of what we're talking about. We've heard about the amount of funds that YDOT's spending. And to have a professional firm come in and evaluate five projects with, I don't know, I think about 30 engineers involved to look at every aspect of what they're doing, how they're doing it, where they do it, when they do it, and only be able to come up with that little sliver of savings, I think speaks enormously for that particular department. And who's going to pay for the roads? Who's going to pay? Let me give you one example. The state to the west of us, they let their roads get past the point of no return. And what that state did, a body similar to ours, they put a 1% tax on anything that involved automobiles. I'm talking about new automobiles, used automobiles, if you needed fan belts, if you needed tires, whatever it was. Now, that they were smart because they didn't set up a whole new department to make this happen. They just went in and looked at the sales and estimated how many sales that particular store was going to produce in a year, and they said, okay, that's what we're going to pay. And so it took a lot of the bureaucracy of it. So that's what you have to look at. And by the way, the state to the east of us did almost the same thing because they let the roads get too far down. Please take that into account. Thank you.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a little bit of pushback from my dear friend from House District 55. He talked about the road in his area that took 7 years and that some of the things were studied and overstudied and corrected. I wish the highway department had done so well on the highway going up the mountain on our side. Every year we just add more asphalt and it creates more weight and the road caves in a little bit more. I think that they learn from their mistakes. And I think that it is a good thing and that you'll have a far better highway and it'll last a lot longer. I am on and in favor of this bill.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of question being called, all those in favor of Representative Madden's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 69 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
House Bill 69 has failed. Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. House Bill 69 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 3. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 3 is introduced by the Corporations Committee, an act relating to the Uniform Commercial Code, extending duration of effectiveness for filed financing statements, providing for future applications, and providing for an effective date. Your Committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 3, Effective Financing Statement - Duration, respectfully reports same back to the House, with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye. Representatives Blickery, Byrd, Gay, Kirkbride, Paxton, Petroff, and Dan Zwanenser. Those who voted no, Representative Green, and excused was Representative Berger.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman, Vice Chairman Blickery?
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 3 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments. Madam Chairman, I would like for our representative from here in Cheyenne to address the bill.
Representative Zwanenser.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. House Bill 3 is brought to us. It's an interim committee bill brought to us from the people that invest our money in this state. And what this is looking to do is change the Uniform Commercial Code to provide a 10-year window from a 5-year window that we currently have. Today in society, increasingly, we have people who are getting loans for further out than 5 years. And so what they're doing now is issuing contingencies and having to go through this process and file contingencies on loans, the county clerks. So what this does is change to a 10-year window from a 5-year window. It had the support of everybody involved in committee. I'd be happy to answer any questions. But it basically is to allow people not to have to file a contingency after 5 years from now on, and we have a 10-year window. The Standing Committee Amendment, if you'd like me to address that as well, Madam Chairwoman. What we heard in committee is now that we're not filing all these contingencies, the workload will decrease, but also the amount of revenue to the counties will decrease. And so what we propose to do is raise the filing and indexing fee from $10 to $20. It's currently $10 to file and a $5 for a continuance. With times and inflation and everything else going up, as we just heard, what the Standing Committee Amendment does is raise it to $20 from $10. I'd be happy to answer any questions on that, should anyone have some.
Representative Walter, did you move the amendment? Vice Chairman Blickery.
Yes, Madam Chairman, I did.
Vice Chairman Blickley? Representative Croker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and against the amendment for the bill, the bill is a good idea. We do need to extend that period out, but we don't need to raise the fees. We just raised gas taxes, just voted to raise the gas tax. Do we need to vote to raise another fee that's passed along to consumers? These fees are paid entirely by the consumers when they're buying products that require a UCC filing fee. It's the same amount of work to file the fee once, so I don't understand why we think we need to raise the fee unless we just want to gouge people for more money. Please vote against the amendment.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thanks, Madam Chairman. This was brought to us by the county clerks, and they did testify there would be a less administrative cost in their agency because they wouldn't have to be filing all these continuances, but it would also be a decrease in revenue that they're currently experiencing, and so they would like that revenue made up. I'm sure your county clerk would be more than happy to talk to each one of you should you call them and vote your conscience on this one.
Are we ready for the question on the standing committee amendment number one? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Standing committee number one has failed. We are back on the bill. Representative Greer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. That for the committee members, I was just curious, did you discuss any enforcement of terminations on these agreements? We're taking the time frame out. We're doubling the time frame. Something I run into is we'll be putting a package together and then find that we have financing statements outstanding that weren't cleaned up. And I'm looking through the uniform code very quickly and not finding any hammer to make sure that we get these terminated. And I'm curious if that was discussed or if I'm missing it in the statute with my quick review. Thank you.
Vice Chairman Blickley.
Madam Chairman, there was some discussion about that in the sense that it is necessary for banks to release their liens so that, you know, people have a clean title when they go to sell something. We didn't address it, though, in this bill.
Question being called. All those in favor of Vice Chairman Blickery's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 3 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
House Bill 3 has passed. Committee of the Whole. Majority floor leader.
Madam Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion carries.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole having had under consideration bills on general file, beg to leave report as follows. House Bill 101, amended. House Bill 101, right. Followed a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill number 4, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. Representative Brown moved that the Committee of the Whole rise and sit again. Motion prevailed. House Bill 69, amended and further amended. And further amended. Not
Okay. Recommended do pass. House Bill number 3. Recommended do pass. Representative Wallace, chairperson.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You have heard the motion. All in favor of adoption of the Committee of the Whole report, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Congratulations, Representative Wallace. We're at that order of business of messages from the Senate.
Message number 112. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 5, Insurance-Limited Lines, ayes 30. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 113. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 8, School Capital Construction Capacity, ayes 28, noes 2, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 114, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 13, Uniform Commercial Code Revisions, ayes 30, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 115, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 30, Special Districts, ayes 19, noes 11, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 116, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 64, Wholesale Malt Beverage Distributors, dash limitations, ayes 21, noes 9. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 117, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 104, Education dash State Administration, ayes 20, noes 10. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
We're at that order of business of reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill number 86, Child Placement Orders, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye. Representative Baker, Connolly, Gingery, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, and Walters, 1 no vote. Representative Watt. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 119, Department of Family Services Programs, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Connolly, Gingery, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, Watt. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 116, Select Federal Natural Resource Management Committee, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Burkhart, Escobel, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stebson, and Wallace.
We're at that order of business of re-referral of bills. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9 would like to re-refer House Bills 65 and 66 to your committee number 2, Appropriations.
Without objection, it is so ordered. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, are you here for a re-referral?
No.
Okay. We are now at that order of business of committee announcements. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee, number four, Education, will meet upon adjournment, 10 minutes upon adjournment, for the consideration of following bills. House Bill 144.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee, number nine, will meet jointly with the like committee from the Senate, or the Senate committee down the hall on Friday at 8 o'clock in room 302 to hear the report of the Wyoming Governor's Energy Engineering STEM Integration Task Force to the committee. And it is open to the public, and it is a very significant piece of work that I think will have a long-term impact on the state of Wyoming, the University of Wyoming, and the future engineers that will work in our energy sector. So I'd urge everybody to make it if they can. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Sunluck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number five, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet tomorrow morning, Thursday, January 17th at 7 a.m., room H11, to continue hearing House Bill 71, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, Tuesday would be the use of water outside the state, and then three additional bills, House Bill 25, simulcasting of paramutual events, House Bill 90, recreational liability, aircraft activities, and House Bill 117, if time permits, administrative rules taking assessment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, will meet in 10 minutes in room H17 to hear three bills, House Bill 108, Food Freedom Act, House Bill 93, Medication Administration by Pharmacists, House Bill 94, Immunization by Pharmacists. And please remember the education seminars at 8 a.m. in room 302 to learn more about Medicaid and what other states are doing to reduce their Medicaid costs. But the best one is upon adjournment tomorrow in room 302, where we'll have a national organization who deals with insurance have a presenter there. He's a dynamic speaker, and he will teach us about health insurance exchanges. So if you have any questions or concerns about that, would you please, please, please attend this, particularly the afternoon one. Thank you.
Chairman Zwanet, sir.
Thank you. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow night, Thursday, January 17th, 10 minutes after adjournment, in H-17 to hear the four following bills. House Bill 147, Vehicle Registration Fees, Purple Heart Exemption. House Bill 127, Driver's License, Veterans Designation. House Bill 148, Railroad Security Officers. And House Bill 95, Railroad Crossings on Track Vehicles.
Chairman Davison.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, and Wildlife and Cultural Resources, will meet at 7 o'clock on Friday morning, the 18th, and we will continue on House Bill 81, and then we'll take up House Bill 122.
Vice Chairman Blickery.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, will meet tomorrow upon noon recess in room H18 to discuss House Bill 35, Search and Rescue Operations, House Bill 42, Land Use Planning, and House Bill 118, Insurance Coverage for Vehicle Accident Cleanup Costs.
Just a note for everyone who received a notice from the chief clerk on January 10th that there were two publications back in the storage room that were sent to us that take up lots and lots of space. And they were, one publication is from the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints, and the second one is from Judicial Watch. If you would like to go back up and pick up a copy of those, they're back there in the copy room for you to pick up a copy. If you would rather not have a copy, let us know, and we will make other arrangements with the publications. Also, I've been receiving 674,000 emails about House Bills 103, 104, and 105. Those all will be introduced on the 25th and heard on the 28th, as I told you all earlier on. The emails, I will still continue to respond to that say, we'll introduce them on the 25th and hear them on the 28th. But just wanted to announce that to everybody that that's happening. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, general filed for tomorrow, House Bill 82, 49, 50, 57, 33, 6, 100, 92, 107, 158, 160, 115, 86, 119, and 116, and other bills that may be read in tomorrow.
Representative Blake, I understand that the Wyoming Cowgirls have a game against a team from the the left coast. If you would lead us in a rousing. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10 o'clock a.m. tomorrow, January 17, 2013.
You have heard the motion. All in favor of adjourning until 10 o'clock tomorrow, January 17, 2013, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. The House is adjourned until tomorrow, January 17th, 2013 at 10 a.m.